Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Put It In Your Pocket, your source for all niche music trivia. My name's Caroline, and today I am so excited to be talking about one of my favorite albums of all time, an album that has been incredibly important to me growing up. It's been an album that I've come back to a lot in these recent months, recent weeks, being someone who's about to finish high school. I'm looking back now on a lot of the music that really helped me transition from middle school to high school, what I was listening to when I was first starting to get into music as a preteen, and Pretty Odd, which is the album that we're going to be talking about today by Panic at the Disco, is an album that has helped me a lot growing up, and it's one, just an insanely beautiful album. It's amazing. One of the best albums to come out of the early 2000s, which is saying a lot, y'all. A lot of really, really, really good music was coming out. We had Panic at the Disco making great stuff for a while. We had Paramore. We had Bring Me the Horizon and Muse, you know, coming off of their big sprints and things like that. And so we had a lot of reflective pop rock on all ends of the spectrum. Obviously, we have like heavier stuff on one side, and then we're getting more like pop rock on another side. So that spectrum of rock music was incredibly amazing at that time period, and Panic was at the middle of it all. And this is the last album for Panic at the Disco to feature Ryan Ross, who is kind of the mastermind behind a lot of their best stuff. I do think that this is their best album. It's my favorite, and I think that his influence and lack thereof in later years definitely has a big impact on the band as a whole. I think a lot of people who know Panic at the Disco definitely know Brendan Urie and recognize his voice instantly, recognize his face. But unless you're kind of into the very, very deep and very subversive Panic at the Disco lore, you don't know a lot about Ryan Ross and his impact on the band. And so this is also kind of a tribute to him. I am missing him in these cold winter months. Panic at the Disco recently played at a festival called When We Were Young, where a lot of, you know, we had like My Chemical Romance. I think Blink 182 might have been there. And Panic at the Disco coming back. And Brendan Urie was the only one there from the original band. And those are moments where, you know, there's so many happy stories that we've told on this podcast, but the loss of Ryan Ross in this band, I mean, he's not dead, but like his leaving the band and like falling out with Brendan Urie is something that I think about a lot. And I wonder how much incredible music they could have made later had he still been in contact with them. And I don't know. So that's definitely something we're going to talk about a little bit while discussing this album. But Pretty Odd has had an incredible impact on me as I've gotten older, and I really wanted to pay tribute to it. I've just been coming back to it a lot, so I'm just so excited to be talking about it and sharing it with you guys. I definitely think my sister is going to know a lot about this album, but I don't know if any other listeners are going to be familiar with it, so this should be all pretty new content. I'm very excited. But Pretty Odd is the second studio album by Panic at the Disco, and it was released in the U.S. on March 25th, 2008. This is such a spring album to me. I almost waited until a few months after this to cover this album just because it's so spring into summer, but I just got so excited I couldn't wait. But initially, before making this album, their previous album was A Fever You Can't Sweat Out that came out in 2005, and that has the iconic track I Write Sins Not Tragedies, one of the greatest songs that ever came out of the emo scene. It's a very impactful song. The music video is wonderful. I could say a million things about it. So that iconic song is on their first album, and their debut did pretty well. Lots of things on that album that I could talk about, so I'm just going to avoid it because I will go on a huge rant. So now we're here with their second album, and you're probably wondering, 2005 to 2008 is a big jump. Why did it take 3 years for them to come out with their second album? Well, there's a very, very long story that we're going to be getting to soon. but initially, before all of this, Panic at the Disco was a Blink 182 cover band, which is something that I think is so interesting. The influences are there, I guess. I am a little glad we're not mimicking the vocals. I'm sorry, that's another thing that's probably gonna be offensive to my sister. Don't love the Blink 182 vocals. But I think you can definitely see some songwriting influences. Maybe not on this album, but on some of their other stuff, and definitely on their debut. And this album was the band's only major release to not feature an exclamation point in their name, being credited as simply Panic at the Disco, no exclamation point, for all major activities until the summer of the following year when they started promoting their next album. So if you aren't aware, Panic at the Disco has an exclamation point after the word panic, and that's just one of the iconic things that is part of that band. And they didn't keep it just for this album, so all credits were just Panic at the Disco straight on, because Pretty Odd is the word pretty, period, odd, period. And so I think that this is such a cool thing that they did. Obviously, the exclamation point is saying a lot about the band separately, but taking out that exclamation and making a point to have different punctuation on this album title shows us that they're going in a very different direction and that they're staying more low-key. We're not as flashy. A Fever You Can't Sweat Out, the entire tour that they did for that album was very, like, dark circus-themed. It was very showy, and that kind of became their whole vibe, and it's still synonymous with the band. But Pretty Odd is very, like, folky, woodsy. They would wrap vines and tree branches and flowers around their microphones when they were touring. Very, very different from what they were doing before and what they did after. So I really think it's interesting that they even changed their title just for the release of this album, because it really is that big of a diversion from what they normally would do. So I mentioned before that there's a very long story about the creation of this album. Well, they actually went up into the mountains to record their second album, and for about 6 months they did that. But they grew really, really dissatisfied with their final product, and they scrapped the entire album and spent time writing and recording Pretty Odd throughout the following year. So there was a lot of pressure on them to put this album out, because their label's like, look, your debut was a huge hit. You know, you got some radio hits from that. You now have a kind of a cult following. So just put out the album and you can work on this next thing later. But Ryan Ross was like, absolutely not. This is my baby. There's no, you know, clear vision for it, but we know we want to do something different. So production came together really quickly, and each song was written, each song that was written made the final cut. So everything that was written for this album stayed true to it, which is super rare, almost unheard of. So I think that it's funny that they say they don't have a clear vision for this album, but it very clearly came from a big source of inspiration. And I think it's a good lesson in, you know, if you don't like something the first time, it's okay to keep working on it. I think we have this idea that all artists should just speak from the soul and put out whatever, but music is a lot more meticulous than you think, and those intentional decisions are what come together to make an album as amazing as this. So I'm really glad that they did that and that they took their time. But Brendan Urie said, talking about this album, that we wanted to write songs differently in the sense that not all songs sounded the same or were part of one set or genre, you know, just doing something different. With this record, we listened to a bunch of different stuff too, so that kind of helped broaden our musical taste. So that's just kind of him saying, we wanted everything to be very different, we wanted everything to come from, you know, a true source within us. And I really like that they talk about their musical inspirations, because a huge part of this album, and what I think makes it so palatable, is that it is very late Beatles. It's very late 60s Beatles to me, and a lot of people have said that that's not a Caroline opinion, but it's very obvious that it's Beatles influence, a little bit Dylan, and a little bit Neil Young, honestly. I think it's a very Neil Young album, and I love Neil Young, and I'm sure a lot of people listening do too, so hopefully you'll be with me on that. But it's no coincidence that it sounds like a Beatles album, because it was produced at Abbey Road Studios, and additional recordings like strings and horns were overlaid there. And like I said before, I just want to reiterate, this is the last album to feature their vocalist and lead guitarist Ryan Ross. He left the band in 2009, a year after the album's release, and guys, the deep dark pit that I think has opened up in every Panic fan, knowing that Ryan Ross will probably never be back. There's a whole long, I could do 3 podcast episodes on the falling out between him and the other members of the band and all of those creative issues, but just know it was messy. It still is messy. And, you know, right now it's pretty much just Brendan Urie out there with the Panic name. And Brendan Urie could also be a whole nother 3 podcast episodes. So I'm going to try and not get sidetracked here talking about just him, but, you know, enjoy the Ryan Ross that I have gifted you today, because he is so ingenious. And he definitely is going to be missed. Not that they didn't do great stuff later. Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, I think is a wonderful album as well. But there's just no Ross on it. And guys, it does matter. So, you know, that being said, Geraldine Woods, an author that I found who wrote like a whole article on this album, which is super interesting. You should definitely go check it out. She said, it seems like Panic has put some thought into the changes. They're not just changes for change's sake. Pretty Odd works because it conjures up images of something that is both pretty and odd, which is interesting. And it's grammatically interesting because without the period, the word pretty would be modifying the word odd. So it takes on a completely different context. What an interesting quote. And I had never thought about this before, but without the punctuation, pretty odd is what it sounds like when you say it. You know, oh, that's pretty odd. But with the punctuation, we have kind of two sides where something is beautiful and very pretty, but it's also odd and kind of strange, maybe off-putting a little bit, and that makes all the difference. I think that's an extremely interesting point, so I had to bring that up. And the first song that was written for this album was a holdover from the scrapped record, the only song that they kept from the record that they made before and then just completely got rid of. It's called Nine in the Afternoon. It's a fan favorite. I'm not a huge fan of it. It's not bad by any means. No song on this album is bad. It's just not something that I particularly love, but I had to bring it up just because it is so iconic. So make a little shelf in your mind for Nine in the Afternoon. But the song that I'm going to be playing you guys, we finally reached the music portion, is called That Green Gentleman, Things Have Changed, just typically called That Green Gentleman. And it's a really, really, really good introduction to this album. First of all, it says the line, things are shaping up to be pretty odd. So the title track's here. But I just think that this song is a really good indicator of what this album sounds like. It was the second song written by the band for the album. And the title of the album was already decided before they wrote the line, things are shaping up to be pretty odd, which is typically the inverse way. Normally, if you have a lyric that you like, it's like naming a book. You would name the title based on the lyric that you already have, but they did it the opposite way, which I think is super interesting. And the music video is so cool. It was directed by Alan Ferguson, and it begins with like a child version of all the band members, who Ryan Ross's band member child version was played by Cameron Boyce, so that's a little trivia piece too. And they're opening these like Russian dolls, and when he opens the last doll, all the members of the band come out and jump off of the desk that he's sitting at, and they land in a big field and find a bunch of musical instruments. And then after playing them for a while, they like open up the dolls, and the child versions come out, and it kind of becomes like a big loop. And I bring that music video up, one, because it's so iconic and it's so weird, but two, it is very, very whimsical and like fun and strange and all the things that this album is. This album is so beautiful, and it's like being transported into another world. It's like kind of this like fantastical version of reality, and it's just such good writing. I'm so excited for you guys to hear these songs. And this song is the perfect coming of age song. I mentioned before that this album has been incredibly crucial to me in my journey of kind of growing up, and it's the perfect like adolescence album, I think. But this song just says things have changed for me, and that's okay. And that's something that I think about all the time. You know, it's hard to grow up and let things change and shift, and you know, see yourself kind of saying goodbye to some things that maybe you didn't think you would, or seeing yourself, you know, take on new roles or challenges that you didn't think you would. And anytime something gets a little too scary, which is often your senior year, things do get really scary. That just line of things have changed for me and that's okay, it's still the same. All of those lines, they're just so comforting. This album is like a big hug. And I think that's why it feels like spring to me. But anyway, enough of me rambling about how much this album is gorgeous and wonderful and perfect. You'll just have to hear it for yourself. So here's the first song that I'm going to play you guys off this album. Please enjoy That Green Gentleman, Things Have Changed, and let me know what you think.
Things are shaping up to be pretty odd. Little deaths in musical beds. So it seems of someone I never met. Elegant crimes fall on your ears from criminal times. They spill up foul from a pretty mouth. When everybody gets there, everybody gets there, and everybody gets their way. I never said I missed her when everybody kissed her. No, I'm the only one to blame. Things have changed. I leave the city.
What an opening track. Oh my goodness. I mean, it's not the opening track off of the album. It's kind of broken up into like a little interlude at the beginning. But to me, this song is when the album really begins. Not that the others are throwaways. It's just, it's so big and bold. It opens right off the bat with the title of the album. It's just so iconic. I love it. This song is like my 9 in the afternoon, I think. I'm definitely more of like a Green Gentleman fan. Oh, so good. Such a wonderful song. Now we're going to get into a different song that comes about three tracks later. Yes, I'm looking right now. 3 or 4 tracks later. And it's called When the Day Met the Night. And I knew I had to sneak this song in here real quick. I'm going to try and not make this album or make this podcast 2 hours long. But I did pick 4 tracks just because it is such a big album. But When the Day Met the Night is a really good example of the whimsical, like fantastic elements of this album because it is kind of like a fairy tale. So this song is a story of love between the sun and the moon. And it's kind of like a parable of sorts, but it's so, one, well-written, and two, just like beautiful and fun. It's just such a gorgeous song, and everything about it is so well put together that I knew I had to sneak it in on this podcast. I love this song. So like I mentioned before, it's kind of like a fairy tale, and my favorite stanza in this song is the line, "When the moon found the sun, he looked like he was barely hanging on, but her eyes saved his life in the middle of summer." I love that. I also love the line where he says, "Would it be all right if we just sat and talked for a little while, and in exchange for your time, I gave you this smile." Beautiful. That's so cute. Are you kidding me? That's adorable. Who wouldn't love that? And the interesting thing about this song is that the summertime, it usually symbolizes peace and prosperity. And I always thought that clashing with the moon was interesting. It also kind of poses the question, they're falling in love in the middle of the summer. And this song talks about like summer, summer, summer all the time. But I think it kind of makes us pose the question at the end, if this is a summertime love or if they'll still be around in the winter, because the sun and the moon both kind of wane eventually. And so I think that this song is on the surface really cute and beautiful and fun as it is. But I think in true Panic at the Disco fashion, after you're done listening to it, it kind of leaves you with this lingering sense of maybe there's a different point of view here, or maybe I should be asking some questions now based on what they've given me. And I think those questions are, is this lasting? Is this going to continue when things get hard? Which is a main theme of this album. And so I think that this song is interesting for more than just what we see on the surface. But I had to sneak this song in here. I hope you find it as beautiful as I do. Here's When the Day Met the Night.
Life in day met the night. So he said, would it be alright if we just sat and talked for a little while? If in exchange for your time, I give you this smile. So she said, that's okay, as long as you can make a promise not to break my little heart or leave me all alone in the summer. Well, he was just hanging around, then he fell in love, and he didn't know how, but he couldn't get out. Just hanging around, then he fell in love, in the middle of summer.
That song's so cute. I just love that song. And we don't do enough of the fairy tale parable storytelling anymore. I think that that's such a cool concept that you don't see very often. And so I'm sure when a band like Panic at the Disco came out with this album, I'm sure fans were like, what is this? But it definitely is so, it comes from such a genuine place that I think everybody just can't help but fall in love with it. And I think that so many artists are scared to step out of the box that we assign to them, whether that's like genre or types of lyrical content or vocal ranges or vocal styles, that maybe they kind of get stuck. But I really do think that audiences and true fans will love whatever you make if it's made with integrity and comes from a genuine place. And this album is just so beyond genuine that it just seeps out of everything that's inside of it. It's just so beautiful. Speaking of beautiful, the next song that I'm going to show you guys is a real heavy hitter. It is possibly, and I'm very biased on the next song that's coming, but I do have to admit, this is probably the best written song off of the album, which is saying a lot. I'm really just showing the tip of the iceberg here. I really wish we could break down everything track by track. It would take me 5 days because there's so much in this album, but this is a song that is very, very lyric heavy, which is probably why I love it so much. You guys know that's like my main focus in everything. But this song is called The Piano Knows Something I Don't, which right off the bat is a wonderful title. And it's already got you asking so many questions. But I really do think it's the best written song off of this album, and the ebb and flow of the music, like the different like types of ups and downs and variety that we're getting music wise is also extremely well done. And the balance that comes from that of super hard, super soft, heavy, light, up and down, that makes it a really engaging song. It's the type of song that you hear and then you look down and you're like, whoa, that was 5 minutes. How? You know, it's one of those. But let's just start off with the first stanza that we hear. So it starts off with just a few bells and chimes and some piano, very quiet. And he says, if I could build my house just like the Trojan horse, I'd put a statue of myself upon the shelf. Of course, of course, of course. I love this stanza. One, because we kind of have a horse, of course, of course, of course reference. And yes, I think that's on purpose. Come and fight me. I think they did that on purpose. So that's already, you know, something that is interesting. But we have this line, if I could build my house just like the Trojan horse, I'd put a statue of myself upon the shelf. Statues on the shelf are probably a reference to the practice of placing pinatas. No, not pinatas, pinatas, or household gods on the mantle of like Roman households before the Romans were like accepting of Greek gods and goddesses and things like that. They would put these little mini statues of Roman gods and goddesses and pretend like they weren't the same thing. And so basically this line is telling us that he, Brendan Urie, Ryan Ross, the writer of this song, whoever, is worshiping himself as the god of his own household. So if I could build my house like the Trojan horse, put all these walls up, have my armor on, I would just worship myself all day. Of course, of course, of course. Love that. So interesting. And so many different little nuggets in just three lines of a song. So cool. And then later, he says, everything's gone missing. I've lost more songs to floods. I can't prove this makes any sense, but I sure hope that it does. Perhaps I was born with curiosity, the likes of those old crows. The likes of those old crows, and oh how the piano knows something I don't know. That is so beautiful and one of the most amazing lines off of this album. I just love, it's just so relatable, one, to the songwriting process and the art making process, I'm sure for anybody, especially if you're a writer, but also just such an interesting look into the mind of someone like Ryan Ross, who writes these amazingly wonderful constructed songs. The piano knows something that I don't know. What a cool line, you know, and just what a good way to say that art just kind of spills out of people like that, people who are just musical geniuses. It reminds me of Brian Wilson a lot, where he would say, I don't really know what I'm feeling until it comes out in a song. You know, the piano knows something that you might not intrinsically know, or you look back on this album and say, wow, I had no idea, you know, that I was like that, or that this came out in this way or whatever, you know? And then we have references to the likes of old crows, known as very wise, like sarcastic creatures. Everything's gone missing. I've lost more songs to floods. That to me is kind of like, there's lots of water references in this album, and water can either represent heavy emotion like rain, or it can represent baptism and being born anew. And I think that it can definitely be both. But in this, I think it's a big wave of emotion. Lost more songs to floods and just, you know, kind of casting things out like they did with the original status of this album. Everything's gone missing, but the piano knows something that I don't. I'm trying not to rant too much about it, but I just think that this is such a genius track. I think it's gorgeous and so well done and just a perfect song. It's just one of those songs that you hear for the first time and you're like, wow, that is going to change my life. That is so beautiful. So I hope that you guys enjoy it as much as I do, but here's The Piano Knows Something I Don't. Like the Trojan horse.
laughing on the window panes, the never-ending swaying haze. Oh, that ever-smiling maze. Oh, that ever-smiling maze. A ballet. Everything's gone missing. I've lost more songs than floods. I can't prove this makes any sense, but I sure hope that it does. Perhaps I was born with curiosity, the likes of those of old crows, the likes of those of old crows. And oh, how the piano knows. The piano knows something.
That track is just so interesting. What an interesting piece of art and media to just like dissect and come back to. This album is so cool because every single track on here, you could have absolutely any opinion or take on, and it could be factual. It's just, it reminds me so much of someone like Dylan, Young, McCartney, Lennon, the types of songwriters that write things that can be relatable to every single person who listens to them. That is talent, and that takes a lot of prowess to be able to do. And Pretty Odd is both like kind of like a niche album meant for a specific type of person, but also I think anyone could enjoy it, you know, with the right like open mind. And I just think that that's a really good example of that. That track is anyway. But before we get to this next song, because this next song is just such, it's just, you'll see. I wanted to give a few honorable mentions to some songs off this album. I mentioned that this album is very long. It's not like crazy long. It's not a double album. It's only 15 tracks, and there's a few that are just kind of interludes. But it, like, it, all the songs on here are long, and they have a lot of lyrics in them, so it kind of feels like you're reading a book in song form, which are my favorite types of albums, so it's fine. But here's some songs that I wanted to play that I just didn't really have time for. One is Passe des Chevaux, and it comes a little bit before this next song that we're going to play. And I just wanted to say that it's so sonically wonderful and well-made that I just wanted to play a little snippet of it. But my favorite line from it is the one that I'm going to play, which is, "Slow, leave walking to the world. Give your feet a chance. They'll do all the thinking. Toast high until they find less pathetic wine until they get a better blend." That is so interesting. Like, one, you're going to be like, what is he talking about? And after some listening, I think everybody can have their own opinion on that. But it's those like really cool, interesting lyrics mixed with how sonically interesting it is, and it's just so catchy. It's just such a catchy song, but the kind of drum line behind it and the fast pace of it also kind of sounds more whimsical than some other things that they've done before, and I just think it's a good indicator of how the rest of the album sounds. I know a lot of the stuff that I'm playing might be a little bit more downbeat, just because that's typically what I like, but this is a good example of like layered vocals on this album. Like I said, more drumming than guitars, which is kind of what we've heard previously. So here's just a little snippet from Passe des Chevaux.
Slow, leave walking to the world. Give your feet a chance. They'll do all the things.
And then the next honorable mention is a song called Behind the Sea. And y'all, it was so hard for me to not put this on this episode. The only reason that I'm not playing it for you guys in full is because I think it's just a little too similar to some other stuff that I've played. It reminds me a lot of this next song that I'm gonna play you guys. So I was just like, I feel like they get it. But if you're gonna listen to anything supplementary after this episode, please listen to Behind the Sea. Wonderful song. It's just, the lyricism is just there. I mean, it opens with the line, "A daydream spills from my corked head, breaks free of my wooden neck, left a nod over sleeping waves like bobbing bait for bathing cod. Floating flocks of candled swans slowly drift across wax ponds." I mean, like, guys, beautiful. Like, this, the type of world building on this album is incredible. And the album cover hands itself to that a lot. Lots of, like, kind of, you get this sense of, I don't know if this is going to make sense, but this album to me reminds me a lot of, like, these old wooden plays that people used to put on where, like, one wooden painted set would descend, like, from the curtains, and then when it's time for the next scene, it would go up again and another one would come down. That's what the album cover looks like to me, and this song reminds me of that, just with all the illustrations they have. But, I love the line, "And we're all too small to talk to God." And then in the next stanza, he says, "Yes, we're all too smart to talk to God." So interesting. And I love those lines. And I think that this whole song is basically saying, I mean, it's called Behind the Sea. And I think it's just saying being a part of this world and feeling very, very small. Also, another thing about growing up, you feel very, very small. The world's very big. And you're like, yeah, I'm too insignificant to do anything or to be somebody. But then, you know, you kind of notice some things around you and how wonderful and magical the world is. And I think you get this sense of, no, I'm too good for this place. I understand things that other people don't. I see and say and create things that other people don't. And, you know, like it or not, I think we all have that kind of egotistical side of us. And if you're a creator like Ryan Ross and you're proud of what you do, I think you have both of those things where you're shy and maybe a little bit, you know, oh, I don't know, there's all these great artists on the music scene, you know, let me just kind of draw back. I'm too small for that. Or, you know, I'm the main mastermind behind Panic at the Disco. Watch out for me. I just think that's kind of my take on it. I think those are both some really interesting, you know, kind of contradictory pieces there. But the lines that I'm going to play you guys, a little snippet, is at the very end where they say, "We're all too smart to talk to God." And then it goes, oh, and it switches into just a chorus of people singing, "Legs of wooden waves, waves of wooden legs, waves of wooden legs." And you're like, what is going on? To me, this is embarrassing. To me, Behind the Sea, when I was younger, I used to think they're talking about pirates with wooden, like, peg legs. I don't know if that's what I think anymore. But the line, "legs of wood waves, waves of wooden legs." One, it's kind of like a tongue twister, so the alliteration is interesting. But also, what an interesting, like, illustration and, like, image to put into your mind. I mean, who just comes up with something like that? I think that, to me, wooden legs are kind of wobbly. They're kind of unpredictable, especially if you're on the sea. And I think, like, these waves of wooden legs versus having wooden legs being on the waves, I think that it's kind of that, like, wobbling, not being sure, being in between type of stage. That's kind of always been what I thought of it. But I'm very interested to see what other people think of this line because it's just so cool. And I just love the way that the chorus sounds. So give Behind the Sea, at least the last 30 seconds of it, a listen.
Talk to God.
Guys, it is finally time to talk about the song Northern Downpour, which is one of my favorite songs of all time, my favorite song off of this album, and just a song that has been an incredible, like, steadfast comfort to me for kind of as long as I can remember. I think I first listened to this album when I was about 13, which was, like, the perfect time to pick it up. I'm so glad that I did. And this song was immediately my favorite. I think it is for a lot of people. It's also a fan favorite. And it has been something that I've thought about just like near constantly. Anytime I'm going through a rough patch or, you know, things get difficult, I think about this song. It's just one of those prime examples of music being, you know, something that's always there for you and that is extremely comforting to us as music lovers. This is my song. And I think about it all the time. It's beautiful. And I'm so a little nervous to share it. This is probably the song that I'm the most nervous about sharing on this podcast, just because it's so personal to me. But I really do want to get it out there in the world, you know, for all three people listening to this. And I just think that it's something that needs to be shared because it's such a beautiful piece. So this song was released on November 14th, 2008 as the fourth and final single from this album. And the lyrics were based on, in Ryan Ross's own words, the band's touring cycle, their girlfriends, and everything that had been important to them in the past few years. So it's kind of about everything, which it's very eclectic. You'll be able to tell when you hear it. And Ross characterized it as the album's most meaningful song, which it definitely is to me. Like I said, The Piano Knows Something I Don't could very well be the best song on this album. To me, Northern Downpour is, but I just know I'm biased, so don't take my word for it. But Sarah Rodman at the Boston Globe wrote that the song, quote, combines trippy imagery and dreamy melodies that pay homage without naked outright theft, which I think is a good example. This song is very Beatles in a lot of ways, like I mentioned before, with the album being that way. And I do agree that it's a good, like, homage to some of those things, but it's not just outright borrowing, which we've kind of seen examples on both sides of that spectrum in this podcast, so that's kind of interesting. In the Washington Post, Freedom DeLock interpreted this, quote, plaintive ballad as a reference to the Beatles' A Day in the Life, which is also my favorite Beatles song, so maybe there is a connection there. And James Montgomery of MTV News ranked it among the best songs of 2008, which is saying something. Great year for music. Great year for music and great year for people who were born then, just saying. But writing that the song was, quote, genuinely pretty and probably the best thing that Panic will ever do, which, my lips are sealed on that. Maybe I agree. I don't know. But I'm going to break down this track basically line by line because, and yes, you will listen because it is that important and it is a wonderful song. So, you know, stick with me here. But at the beginning, he says, if all our life is but a dream, fantastic posing greed, then we should feed our jewelry to the sea. For diamonds do appear to be just like broken glass to me. I'm going to say this about every line, but that is so beautiful. I love that. But at the beginning, when he says life is but a dream, that kind of brings to mind row, row, row your boat, which adds to the like nursery rhyme, whimsical, fantastical vibe of this whole album. And then he says, we should feed our jewelry to the sea, which is a very special way to put that. I feel like another person would just say that we should throw our jewelry into the ocean, but feed our jewelry to the sea kind of one evokes like a more gentler thing, feeding it to the sea, but also kind of makes the sea like a beast or a creature and kind of personifies it rather than just saying throw it into this still body of water. So that's a very emotional line that could have just been another throwaway piece. So I think that that's amazing that they kind of added that into it. And then diamonds do appear to be just like broken glass to me is also very beautiful. And I love that line. And then he says, and then she said she can't believe genius only comes along in storms of fabled foreign tongues, which to me reminds me a lot of The Piano Knows Something I Don't. And then he says, tripping eyes and flooded lungs, northern downpour sends its love. Beautiful lines. And these emotions are kind of like filling up Ross's life, right? We heard earlier in The Piano Knows that like flooded metaphor again, and then behind the sea, lots of things like that. But the downpour of that is sending its love. And I feel like this is his genius in the way that he creates his art. Again, very much reminiscent of The Piano Knows, where he's kind of talking about himself in the sense that like these huge waves of emotion that evoke these beautiful pieces of art, these albums, these songs, you know, everything that he does, this poetry that he writes, can be a lot. Tripping eyes and flooded lungs, you know, like when people say flooded lungs, that's typically like a sinus thing, like you've been crying a lot. But the northern downpour is sending its love. And that is, in the end, a good thing, even though it can be difficult to rein in at first. And then after that, they go into the iconic lines, hey moon, please forget to fall down. Hey moon, don't you go down. Sugar Cane and the Easy Morning, Weather Vanes, My One and Lonely. So One and Lonely is definitely the most interesting part of this stanza. So typically you'd be saying your one and only, so the person that you love more than anything. But this like play on words of that is kind of painting them as two different things. One as like a synonym for whole, like the whole thing, and lonely, so a feeling of being associated with emptiness, lack of fulfillment, all of those wonderful things. And so one and lonely kind of isolates the two, and it's a play on words of that like kind of trite saying one and only. Another example of him just twisting things around to make them fresh and interesting, and kind of taking not the easy route of writing, but going down like kind of a back alley way of saying the same thing. Very interesting. And then we get some more beautiful lines. Through playful lips made of yarn, that fragile Capricorn unraveled words like moths upon old scarves. Such good writing, because one, we have the playful lips made of yarn. So that obviously is a tie into unraveled words. So we're unraveling the yarn spool like moths upon old scarves. So we have that kind of like old dusty vibe. Moths are kind of like attacking this and peeling it away, but moths cling to fabric. Yarn has fabric, I'm assuming. I don't sew or whatever you do with yarn, but again, just like multiple references to, I don't know how to explain it, multiple references to one thing and saying one thing in three different ways is difficult to do. It is hard to write songs like this. It's extremely hard. It's why most people don't do it. And I think that this song just, I don't need to say it. I feel like you guys are going to get it, but it's just so incredibly impressive to me that someone like Ryan Ross, especially at the age that he was at, was able to do something like this. Like, I'm just so in awe every time I hear it. And then we get to my favorite line of this song. I know the world's a broken bone, but melt your headaches, call it home. This is, I'm about to drop some very, very embarrassing knowledge for you guys. When I was 13, I had a Pinterest board, like many people did at the time, and it was about tattoos that I wanted to get when I was older, and one of them was a forearm tattoo of this line. I know the world's a broken bone, and it had a little wishbone, but melt your headaches, call it home. I wanted that, and thank God you have to be 18. That's why we have laws like that, because Jesus, I do not want that on my arm anymore. But beautiful line, just don't want it inked into me permanently anymore. But that's how much this line meant to me when I was younger. And this line, I was so delighted to learn that this is also Ryan Ross's favorite line. He told Brendan Urie specifically when singing this to, quote, pay special attention to it because it meant so much to him. So on the rare occasions that Brendan will sing this song nowadays, it is very rare, but like I said, it's a fan favorite. He oftentimes is shown like tearing up or crying during it. And so again, it might be kind of parasocial, but a lot of people will record it and be like, oh, he misses Ryan, like all of that stuff. And you never really know what feelings are attached to someone's song, but you know, it just a beautiful line and a wonderful testament to the enduring nature of this album. This kind of like resistance and coming back when things get difficult, and you know, staying when summer turns into winter, and when you know, when the day turns into the night, things like that are all themes of this album that make it so connectable, so beautiful, and so inherently human. And this album is just everything I feel like Ryan Ross had to say before he left the band, and I think that it really does come from his heart, and you can tell. And this is not a knock on Brendan Urie. His vocals and his earnestness when singing is what makes some of these songs, and it just all comes together to be so beautiful. And I'm just so proud to be sitting here playing Northern Downpour, because it really does mean so much to me. And so I am very, very happy to introduce Northern Downpour by Panic at the Disco, possibly in my top 5 songs of all time. So please give it a listen, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do.
If all our life is but a dream, fantastic posing greed, then we should feed our jewelry to the sea. For diamonds do appear to be just like broken glass to me. And then she said she can't believe genius only comes along in storms of fabled foreign tongues. dripping eyes and flooded lungs. Northern downpour sends its love. Hey moon, please forget to fall down. Hey moon, don't you go down. Sugar cane in the easy morning, weather veins my one and lonely. The ink is running toward the page, it's chasing off the days. Look back at both feet and that winding knee. I missed your skin when you were east. You clicked your heels and wished for me. Through playful lips made of yarn, that fragile Capricorn unraveled words like moths upon old scarves. I know the world's a broken bone, but melt your headaches, call it home. Hey moon, please forget to fall down. Hey moon, don't you go down. Sugar cane in the easy morning, weather veins my one and lonely. Sugar cane in the easy morning, weather veins my one and lonely. Sugar cane in the easy morning, weather veins my one and lonely. Sugar cane in the easy morning, weather veins.
That song always makes me very emotional because of some of the memories I have attached to it, finding it when I was younger, and just how beautiful of a song it is. But prepare yourself, it's probably about to get sappy, but being able to play this song on a podcast that I'm running is, it doesn't even feel real. It's literally like a dream. And I am just so incredibly grateful for all the people that have been supporting me on this journey, for the people at WJJC for letting me run this whole thing. It's been incredible, and thank you so much for the opportunity to do all of this. Thank you to everybody who tunes in every week. It means the absolute most to me. Every text I receive, or, you know, thing that y'all say to me in person, or people just saying, hey, I listened to this last night, you know, it was great. That means more to me than you guys will ever know. And just being able to sit here and share music that has had a really big impact on me, you know, stuff I love, stuff I hate, and stuff that's kind of just in between. It's just my dream, and it's everything that, you know, has brought me joy, and the ability to be able to create and write a show based on those things has been the craziest experience for me. So I just wanted to thank you guys, because we've been doing this for about 13 weeks now, I think, and it's been a super, super fun journey, and I just want to thank you guys so much for your support and every lesson you've ever taught me along the way of this. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed Pretty Odd, an album that always brings out the most emotional in me. So thank you for bearing with me on this. But thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Let me know what you liked, what you'd like to hear next. And as always, my name's Caroline. This has been Put It In Your Pocket.